Hey, welcome to Fitzdog Radio. Fresh off my tour of Canada and Pittsburgh. Canada was amazing. Thank you, people, for coming out. I didn't know they got the internet up there, but a lot of people had seen my special, and they came out, and they were amazing. Toronto, Canada, and Hamilton, Canada, which is sort of like an hour and a half south of Toronto, but had a blast. Little hectic. Flew into Pittsburgh on Friday. My flight was late. Air Canada sucks a bag of dicks. Can we just say that out of the gate? They're just notorious for canceling and delaying flights. So anyway, my flight was 4.5 hours delayed. I landed at 7 p.m. and the show time was 7. No, I landed at 6:15. The show time was at 7. And it was an hour away. So they delayed the show a little bit. I literally changed in the car into my tuxedo, got there, and walked right on stage. And the crowd couldn't have been better. Pittsburgh, PA, I got to tell you something. The improv, the staff at the improv is among the best in the country. They treated me like gold. They ran a good show, policed the audience well, gave me good food. I just felt special, and the crowds made me feel special. It was just one of these I'm on the road a lot, and I have weekends that I come home depleted and frustrated, and I have nights I go to the hotel room feeling depressed. This was one of the weekends you come home feeling kind of invigorated, kind of excited about stand-up again. Something about Pittsburgh, it's just the crowds are just real America. It's blue collar, but it's kind of smart blue collar, and they can take a joke. You can shit on them. I talked to, it's the kind of city that people don't leave. Like the people, you ask them, where are you from? They all say Pittsburgh. It's not like being in Austin where 9 out of 10 people are from another city. Nobody comes there. Nobody leaves there. It's just Pittsburgh. It is what it is. And I had so much fun. The hotel was crazy because it was a lot of people staying there that had come in to see me from West Virginia and Ohio that were staying at the hotel. It was fucking crazy. So many people came in. And there was a couple next to me, the hotel room next to me. It was a beautiful day on Saturday. So I've got a sliding glass door to a little patio, and I can hear people having sex like from 3 feet away. There is a couple fucking on their patio. I mean, I literally, if I had leaned out, I could have stood there and watched them. And they were, and this woman, I felt like the way she was enjoying it, the cursing, the moaning, I felt like I needed to go home and give my wife an apology because I haven't fucked. That was fucking. And I wanted to applaud them when they were done. They sustained. It was a solid 30 minutes. And I could tell, you try to picture them, of course. And they were in my mind. They were overweight, middle-aged black people. And does that sound racist? I don't know. Maybe it does, but that's what they sounded like to me. And then that evening, I left to go to the show. I walked out of my room at the same time they did. The middle-aged black overweight couple from next door stepped right out into the hallway. I don't know if they saw the sly grin on my face or the twinkle in my eye. But I like to think they knew that I knew. You don't make noises like that and not assume that your neighbors are all in on it. So that was kind of exciting. And then this was crazy. I was thinking about Pittsburgh. It's very racially diverse. And the hotel had a lot of black people. And I'm getting off the elevator on Sunday. And I'm going up the elevator with these kind of older Pittsburgh Steeler jacket wearing couple, big belly on the guy, and the elevator door is open to our floor, the third floor, and there is a black couple opening up their door. They got the key, and they're about to open up the door. And the white couple that I'm on the elevator with, the guy goes, are you allowed to be here? And it was a needle scratching in my head, I was like, what is it? Should I get my phone out? What's happening? And the black guy kind of spins his head around. And he said, what? And then the guy said, was it a Phillies jacket? The guy opening the door, the black guy had like a Phillies jacket on. No, a Redskins jacket on. And that's what he meant. He goes, Redskins or something. And I was just like, oh my God, thank God. You don't know what year it is when you're in different parts of the country. It's different years. It's different decades altogether in some places. So I go to the show and I get an email from the club owner. And he says to me, I should read it to you. Oh, I'm going to actually read it to you because this was pretty amazing. The club, you know, the comics are all pretty close and everybody is very supportive of each other. And then I get an email that's a text that says, hi, Greg, Paul at the club here. Would you be open to adding a guest spot tonight? It would be, and he says the guy's name, a local comic that has been touring for a while, a good comedian, and he's been battling cancer. He was told by doctors that he only had a few weeks to live 2 months ago. He hosted here earlier this month. It really helps his spirits. I don't normally ask for something like this, but wanted to get him on stage again as he just got out of the hospital today. So I write back immediately. I write, fuck that guy. And then I let it sit. Here's the beauty of me is I didn't immediately write another text. I let it sit. I gave it 2 minutes. No, a minute. I gave it a minute to 2 minutes to germinate. And then I wrote, just kidding, of course. Love to have him on. And so I went over and the guy comes in and he was, his name is Mark. And he had just come from some kind of treatment. He doesn't look good. And he's the sweetest guy you've ever met. I mean, he's just one of these guys you want to take care of. He's just a sweetheart. And he goes on stage and he crushes. He performed like he just had such rhythm and timing and smart jokes, and it was personal. He's just got something very vulnerable about him on stage. And he didn't say to anybody in the crowd that he was sick, but I was just amazed. And also, did his time. If I'm about to die of cancer, I'm going long. Fuck the feature. Fuck the headliner. I'm going to do an hour. I'm going to do a one-man show. I'm going to sop it up. Because if this cheers the guy up, and I'd be all for it. If this cheers the guy up, keep going, dude. But yeah, he was great. And I just was thinking about that. Like, would I still go on stage if I knew I had, you know, weeks or months to go? And I guess I probably would. I mean, what else? What else are you going to do when you're a comedian? You want to do the thing that brings you joy, that validates you. I think all the other bullshit falls away except the people that you really love the most and the thing that you love the most. So, and he was a little emotional. And he was very honest about it. We talked in the green room. So, anyways, that was interesting. We also had We had some funny audience interactions. We had this woman's in the front row and she's alone and she's adorable. And I ask her how old she is and she says she's 27. And I said, why are you sitting alone at my comedy show? And she goes, I got stood up. I go, get the fuck out of here. You got stood up? And she was very gentle and nice. And I go, who stood you up? And she told me that she'd gone on a Tinder date with this guy, and then this was supposed to be their second date. And then he canceled on her. I go, did he cancel? Like, did you show up to the show and he just didn't arrive? And she goes, no, he canceled like a few hours ago. And I go, and you came anyway by yourself? I said, good for you. I said, that's ballsy. That says a lot about you. Good. And then you sat in the front row alone. So we kind of celebrated her a little bit. We talked about how she deserves better and she'll get better and blah, blah, blah. And then I gave her a pin, the Greg Fitzsimmons tour pin, which you can only get at live shows. And I gave it to her and her eyes welled up. She got teary because she was kind of touched. And then I said, let's call this asshole. And at first she hesitated. I go, no, trust me. Let's just call this guy. So she dials his number and I tell the crowd on the count of three and we did it. It rang and it rang and it rang. And of course he sent it to voicemail because he's fucking ghosting her. And I got to his voicemail and on the count of three, the entire audience, 400 people all screamed, Paul is a faggot. If you could have heard it with rage in their voices, because they loved this girl. And she smiled for the first time, and it was very sweet. So that was fun. It was a very Jerry Springer moment where I was like, am I throwing this person under the bus for entertainment value right now? I don't know. I saw that Jerry Springer. Did you see the thing on Netflix? It's about Jerry. I think it's two or three episodes about the history of the Jerry Springer show. And believe me, nobody loved it more than me. I watched it constantly. And it's, but I didn't realize somebody got murdered. I'm sure a bunch of people got murdered, but one of them we know about. There was a woman who got killed by this guy. It was very sad. And it ruined her whole family's life. There was another guy that married a horse. And the horse came on stage. Then the guy was making out with the horse. They were like tonguing each other. Like a little Shetland pony. And he was talking about how he fucks the horse. And that didn't get them thrown off the air. I mean, that show, you forget how insane that show was. The KKK would come on. And then Jews would charge the stage and beat up the KKK guys. And one producer said he quit because there was a girl who was a prostitute. She was like a 17-year-old prostitute, and she wanted her father to come on the show so he would stop calling her escort service to get set up with him. So the producer goes to the woman's hotel room the night before to check on her, and the father answers the door and the girl is in a robe, and the guy got nauseous and he quit the show that night. That was it. I mean, it's dark. It's fucking, do you think of Jerry Springer's, it's fun, people hit each other with folding chairs, but they were so under the gun to, they beat Oprah in the ratings. Everybody was watching that show until people go like, all right, now I think they're faking it. But anyway, not to bum you guys out, but that was what I watched. Coming to you live, Boston, Massachusetts, this weekend. Laugh Boston, April 4th and the 5th. I'm actually coming in the night before because I'm going to the Red Sox opening day on the day of the 4th, and that's going to be fun if it doesn't get rained out. Huntington at the Mamba on May 4th. Escondido, Grand Comedy, May 9th and 10th. Then I'll be coming to Cincinnati, Dayton, Kentucky, at the Commonwealth on May 16th and 17th. Then I'm coming to Tampa, Escondido, Torrance, Austin, Point Pleasant, New Jersey, just added. La Jolla, a bunch of new dates. So go to fitzdog.com. Get yourself some tickets. All right, I'm very excited to tell you about a new sponsor to the show. Do you want to support American farms these days? How about Mood? Mood is it's the only It's the only online cannabis company that I would endorse. They're revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. Sleepless nights, you got some stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They deliver them right to your door, unmarked bag right away. You can get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code FITZ, F-I-T-Z. Do it. It's a new sponsor. I'm very excited about them. I've tried the gummies. I'm here to tell you. There are different strains that do different things. The sleepy time gummy, I'm telling you, 15 minutes, I was done. I was out. Woke up in the morning, no hangover, didn't feel groggy, had energy. They've got the Epic Euphoria gummies that are perfect for when you want to go and have a little fun. When maybe you need to hit the reset button on life a little bit. You want to turn it around. What makes these gummies different is they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary anywhere like these. They have gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity. How about some sexual arousal? Hey now. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code FITZ. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember, use promo code FITZ so we get the count at the checkout. Save 20% off your first order. Okay, my guest is a legendary comic. All the comics love him. All the audiences respect him. The guy has been destroying for decades. And a good dude. He's just a good dude. I've known him for a long time, and I had such a good time sitting down with him this past week. We shot the shit. We talked for another hour after the show. He had an 8-season run on Mad TV. He's a master impressionist, a killer stand-up. He was on Def Comedy Jam a bunch, The Tonight Show. He's had hour specials on Comedy Central, and he was in Jerry Maguire. I know you're going to love it. Kick back, take a little gummy, and enjoy Ari Spears. Ari Spears is my guest. Welcome.
What's up, brother?
Yankees. Oh, that's right. You're a New Yorker.
Yeah. I think first and foremost, though, we should kind of tell everybody how this is full circle for me.
How's that?
Because, you know, when I first started my podcast, going on 6 years ago, everybody was like, well, the key to successful podcast and awareness is you got to do other people's podcasts.
Right.
So your podcast was the very first podcast that I was ever on.
I remember that.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yes, yes.
I think I said that to you when I saw you. We were both at K-Rock doing interviews. Mm-hmm. Was it K-Rock the
I
other
think
day?
So. Yeah, yeah.
And I said, you got to come back on again. And then I just remember, I go, you were a little nervous last time you did it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was first time out the gate.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, I didn't know what.
And you were great. I mean, immediately when we started, you were fine. But you came in kind of like, how does this work?
Yeah. So it took
And now yours is The Jew and the Jerk. Is that your podcast?
Yes, Spears and Steinberg, The Jew and the Jerk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Steinberg is who?
Andy Steinberg. He's my opener.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so you can shoot it on the road.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Video and audio?
Yeah, both, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How long is he open for you?
About 6 years now.
Does he change up his act as you change up your act, or is he kind of doing the standard 20?
You know, it varies. He's doing a lot more crowd work now. So he'll add that into what he's already doing.
Does that bother you if you do crowd work?
No,
but
not
what if
all.
You start talking to the same person he's talking to? Because you do crowd work
as
well.
Yeah, but no, our attack modes are completely.
Oh, really?
We might see completely different things.
Right.
You know, and even if we see the same thing, I don't want to come off that way, but I'm nice with it, man.
So he's the jerk.
No, I'm the jerk. He's the Jew.
But on stage, it sounds like you're the nicer one.
Oh, no.
You go hard.
Oh, I go hard.
Oh,
man.
Okay.
I'm like Shaq in his prime. I go hard in the paint. Yeah.
Yeah, Shaq enjoyed landing on people and then sticking around for a second and eyeballing you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was all by design. If you know Shaq, he's a big kid. He's a big entertainer.
Right.
You know, it's almost like if he wasn't a basketball player, comedy would have been his forte.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
He used to do this show called Upload with Shaq.
I did that show.
Oh, yeah. So yeah. I went on that show, and I did this thing where he shit on me early on. And so I said, I started calling him every other black guy's name. I'd be like, well, listen, Moses. And so he started laughing. And then by the end, he had his head down. He was pounding it. And so when the show would end, they would play music and everybody would dance.
Yeah.
He fucking picked me up and put me on his shoulders and was dancing with a 50-year-old man sitting on his shoulders. And I'm just holding his head, just looking like, I don't want to be here right now.
I always said, thank God he never had early angry Mike Tyson energy.
Yeah.
Because for a dude to be that tall and that big and that girthy, if he had Mike Tyson's angry energy, white people put away the kids and lock the doors.
Yeah, and he does it all, man. He's like, he's a sheriff in some county down
Well, that's laughable, but.
Is it?
Undercover work? Never. Never.
Do your impression of Shaq trying to fit in a teenage at a frat party.
All right, as long as we bring the keg and the beer, and everybody act responsible, nobody will notice me. We're gonna charge people $5 at the door. Red cups only. You only get in with a red cup.
That's great. So did you guys like connect on that show? Did you like stay in touch?
Oh, absolutely. Not stay in touch in the sense that, you know, hey man, what you doing this weekend? Listen, I'm gonna come to the barbecue. You know, it's more like friends by, you know, entertainment affiliation.
Right.
You know, your real friends will help you bury a body.
Yes.
You know what I mean? But whenever I see them, it's all love. You know, mutual respect.
Yeah.
You know, so that's as close as we are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice to have. That's the funny thing about L.A., like, people don't exchange numbers as much.
Well, if it's not genuine, they exchange them, but, you know it's not genuine because it's just for, you know, in the moment.
I got Shaq's number on my phone.
I do, too.
Yeah, but I've never used it.
And if you have it, it probably ain't working because he changes his number every 3 months.
Well, yeah, black people do.
No. As a part of the black delegation, don't really do that.
You've had the same number for a long time?
This is the longest I've had my last number.
Yeah.
Before a minute, you know, I would change it from time because, you know, them hoes get close, man. You know what I mean?
Are you still single?
No, but
Do you have two phones? You ever had two phones?
I did at one point, but I didn't like that.
Because of a girlfriend?
Because I was trying to be slick.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I did that once. Yeah. The keep up is too much.
Oh, man. You know? Your wrong phone rings in front of her.
I feel like Harrison Ford in The Fugitive. Like Tommy Lee is always two steps behind me.
Right.
So, I don't want that much headache, man.
Jesus Christ. So you've never been married?
Twice to the same woman.
No shit.
And might do it a third time.
No.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you just got to keep doing it till you get it right.
But that's one theory. So wait, when you break up, is there alimony?
Oh, yeah.
So you've got two different Does the new marriage cancel out the old alimony, and is that why you keep getting remarried?
Well, no, it doesn't. But I keep getting remarried because, listen, I'm not gonna paint myself a saint. I'm toxic. She's toxic.
Yeah.
You know. But the same thing that makes us go at each other, like Israel and Palestine,
yeah,
is the same passion that makes us love each other, like Bonnie and Clyde.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and I'm not big on change.
Uh-huh.
I'm 49. I'll be 50 April 3rd. And
oh, you're an Aries?
Yeah,
his name Aries.
Yeah. So to be out here in these streets trying to tackle some new broad,
yeah,
I just don't have the patience.
No.
The time or the energy. I don't give a fuck about your birthday, what your favorite color is. You know, just suck my dick and I'll pay the light bill.
I like that.
Yeah.
I think that's the t-shirt you should sell after your shows.
Yeah, I'm trying to get on the plane with that one. Nobody will complain.
Yeah, I think it's like marriage can be a thing where you go like, and I think maybe especially on your third one, you start to realize that you don't need to fight every battle. And you realize the ones about each other that are important. Like with my wife, we got these double doors that we put our coats in when we come in the door. And when I leave them open, she loses her shit. I can either stand there and say, honey, they're just two doors. You can just close them yourself.
How dare you make sense?
Right. Or I can just close the fucking doors.
Right.
And absorb a punch or two and move on. Yeah. And then later on, when I say, what's the thing that drives me crazy about her? Oh, when I make turkey burgers, she'll always season them while they're still in the package. She'll open the top of the package and season them. But then I go, yeah, but I got to make the patties with my hand and then the seasoning's all over the place. So just don't do that. And I swear to you, three times, I don't yell at my wife. I was, my volume was raised.
Yeah.
And then I stop and I go, what is this? Was I raped by a turkey? Like, why am I so angry about a turkey burger?
You right. know?
But then now she realizes, don't season the fucking turkey burger.
Hey, man, you know, yeah, you're right. And it's like the older I'm getting, the more I want to just fall back and, you know, no drama.
Yeah.
I don't know drama, man.
No.
You know? And, you know, listen, I'm no saint. I've done a lot of shit wrong. But I'm at that point now where I'm going, dude, I'm just too old to be acting like I'm 20.
Yeah.
You know? So there's certain things that you just have to surrender to.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been hard for me to come to that realization that I have to surrender. You know? It's like I don't like going to bed at a set time.
Yeah.
I don't like not being able to eat bacon cheeseburgers and fried chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't like having but now I got to go, dude, I got to fucking have a diet, a bedtime.
Yeah,
this shit is real, man.
Yeah, it's all about managing energy. And it's not just about the weight and the cholesterol with that food. It's about, like, you have a cheeseburger for lunch. You're going to need a nap at 3 o'clock. You know, when you're young, you can rip through food and do good. But now you got to go, like, all right, I got to get that extra hour sleep. That means I got to go to bed earlier. And, you know, even masturbation for me has become something I really stagger out. I can't go at it every day.
Well, a lot of dudes don't want to believe this, women too, but I haven't beat off to completion since I was 16. I refuse to masturbate. Never.
No kidding.
Nah, why? For what? Why would I do to myself what a woman can do, which feels so much better?
When you say not to completion, do you go 90% and then back off?
I just meant that, you know, I mean, all the way to the, you know, the male mayonnaise shoots off.
Yeah.
You know, but I haven't done that since I was 16, man.
No kidding.
I don't even think I could get an erection with it just in my hand.
I think maybe you're not doing it right.
Oh, no, I know how to do it.
Yeah.
Ain't but one way to do it. It ain't algebra. Back and forth.
But are you using your right hand?
I'm a lefty.
Maybe try it with your right hand.
I don't have as much strength.
But that's the key. It's, neither does a woman. It'll feel more like a woman.
A woman could breathe on it and I'm shooting off. It's a woman.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. I think that's very Buddhist. I think Buddhists probably don't masturbate. I think it's the life energy that you're getting at. First of all, nutritionally, you know how much protein you got to eat to make up one cum shot? You're just taking really good nutrients and expelling them from your body.
Listen, I think that with my diet, in terms of high blood pressure, high cholesterol, type 2 diabetes, drinking, smoking, the only reason why I'm alive is because I probably cum 5 times a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a good nut keeps you alive.
Yes.
And I think a lot of men die because they ain't fucking enough.
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But I also think it's good for your prostate. The doctors now recommend that you ejaculate 5 times a week.
Oh, my prostate is as healthy as...
Tight.
Poof.
Yeah. Your doctor puts his finger in. He can't get past the second knuckle.
Oh, God. Now we venturing into white man humor. Niggas don't do booty jokes.
Yeah, what? Why is that? Why is there no? Is ass play not as common now? Do you think in the black world, or you just don't talk about it?
You know,
much?
Listen, I actually do a very funny joke about when I had my prostate checked. Because you know the black community is very homophobic.
Yeah.
You know, and very conservative, and black men just don't play that shit.
Right.
So even in my joke, you know, I address the elephant in the room, which is at the end of the joke, I go, you know, what's funny about when I tell that joke is all the black men, they want to laugh. You tried to laugh, but you fought it.
Uh-huh.
But the white guys don't have a problem laughing at that because white boys play gay games with each other all the time. Tanner, dude, Ethan, sleep. Put your cock on his face and take a picture. That kind of shit is funny to white guys.
Dude, throw a cracker in the middle. Let's see who can do it first.
Yeah, black dudes don't play them games, man.
Dude, are you watching White Lotus?
No, I'm not.
All right, because there's way to get to the last episode of season 3.
I just
talk about white guys playing gay games.
I just did my boy Jay Moore's podcast recently.
Oh, that's a fun
and
one.
I saw a clip of him talking about, can anybody just please tell me what the fuck White Lotus is about?
It's not about anything. There's literally no plot. The guy, Mike White, I think his name is, the writer. It's like he did 2 great seasons. It was fun.
Of that show?
Of that show. But it's the same resort, but the first season was in Hawaii. The second season was in Italy. And now this one's in Thailand. But it's the same, like, it's like a 4 seasons resort.
Yeah.
And the first two were fun. And then this one, like, I keep going, when does the fucking story start?
Dude, my 2 favorite shows of all time. One of which I own the 6-season pink velvet DVD box collection, Sex and the City and The Sopranos.
You're kidding me right now.
I am not.
Sex and the City?
Was my fucking show.
No way.
Are you kidding me? The writing on that show was phenomenal.
It's all puns. It's all wordplay.
Well, you could tell the influence.
Yeah.
Because some of them jokes... Hey, honey, the delivery is such, it's so obvious and gay, but still.
No, the showrunner was a gay guy.
Oh, yes,
Mike,
of course.
Michael something.
Yeah, but between the writing and the characters and the, you know, anybody that's ever been in a relationship with the opposite sex, you can relate to that, you know? So Carrie, Miranda, Charlotte.
Who was yours? Who would have been your
girl? Them legs on Charlotte, man.
Yeah.
Oh, Christy, what's her name? Christine Davis?
What are you asking me for? I don't watch that fucking show.
Man, that show is the
best.
I can't
believe you like that show.
Best.
Wow.
How could you not? As a comedian, it's education, it's school's in session.
And well, that's true. I guess you are finding out about the female, the sexual psyche of the female.
Of white
women. It's all laid out.
A lot of it for a woman, period. You know, regardless of color, speaks to women, obviously. But if you really want to nab a white bitch, watch Sex and the City.
Oh, I see. That's your angle.
No, that's
because there was no black women in that show.
No, but my angle is funny first.
Yeah.
And funny gets you to women.
Right.
So it does both things at once.
Yeah.
You know, it's just culturally you learn some things about white women that normally you might not have, you know.
Cosmopolitans.
Yeah, and you know. Shit like that.
Flavored douches.
Yeah, my other show was The Sopranos. Oh, God.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I think that's probably my number one show. I'm rewatching it for the 4th time right now. And the pilot episode, it's the great, well, not the greatest. It's up there with the greatest pilot episodes of all time.
It's one of the greatest fucking shows of all time. Question for show, Bushy. My kids, matter what AJ. Got out of Artie's for the matter guy with the fucking gravy.
How do you say gabagoo?
The fuck a gabagoo.
You know, people always ask me, when you do an impression, how do you know? It's like having an ear for music.
Yeah.
Everybody's voice is a note, a key.
Right.
And with Tony, it's the ish. Talking about Jadish.
Yeah.
Uncle June.
Yeah.
You know, Silvio's. Uncle June and Johnny Shaq.
Yeah.
You got it to Shaq.
So, if you get them notes, you in there.
If you really want to impersonate him, get a plate of ziti. Nobody eats a plate of ziti like James Gandolfini.
Well, you could hear them breathing. You can hit a fork stabbing. You can hit a fork stabbing a plate. A couple of times you hit a brave and it's a popsicles in my mouth. The sauce.
Sauce.
The sauce.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that was amazing. You know, in the pilot episode, he gained. They didn't pick the show up for like a year.
Yeah.
And in that year, he gained 15 pounds on purpose.
Yeah.
And he went to a voice coach to learn a better Jersey accent.
Well, I don't know if you noticed it, but since you bring that up, in the first two seasons, it wasn't as cartoony.
Right.
It was more like, you know, I've been walking on the walls all week. Yeah. But then later, you know, it got to that.
Yeah.
You know, but before it was a lot deeper and it wasn't as over the top.
Right, yeah. Right. And then you see him talk in real life and you're like, holy shit.
It's mind blowing. Because I remember the first time, because I mean, I had always seen him in the movies.
Yeah.
But I'd never really focused on him like that until The Sopranos. But by that time, I was hearing Ish.
Yeah.
But then I saw him do an interview on 60 Minutes. And the guy asked him, what do you attribute the show's success to? You know, it's great writing, David Chase. It's all about the writing. And the writing is, I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I know.
Who is this dude?
I know.
Because I just thought he was always that Tony sound.
Yeah.
So it was just weird to hear that.
Right. Well, he was also way coked up in those later seasons.
Yeah, so I found out. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. And he used to hook up with my friend who was a bartender in the West Village, and he used to come into this one bar, Jane Street Cafe, I think it was called, and she said he was like telling her that they were shutting down production some days because he was so fucked up, and he was struggling with it.
Really?
You know? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Fuck.
You know, it's amazing. I met at least five or six different people from that show.
Oh, yeah?
Like, I was at a club in New York, and I ran into the kid that played AJ.
Yeah.
On the show, on the lot where we shot Mad TV. I ran into Richie Aprile, Uncle June at the Laugh Factory. But I never met Gandolfini. Mm. And I remember I ran into a Steven Van Zandt at the XM radio station because he had a podcast.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But I just was like, dude, I never met the big dog.
Right.
And I was always a little intimidated because he seems like if you catch him on the bad day, he might Tony Soprano you.
Oh, he goes after the paparazzi.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it viciously.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. But
so.
No, but that show really, it'll go down in history. It'll stand the test of time. And, you know, there was a time where we had this kind of like Guido fetish in this country, you know, started with The Godfather and then it was Goodfellas, and then The Jersey Shore, and then Sopranos, and it was like, all right, I'm no longer enamored with a guy with a dumb accent who dresses nicely
because we're men
and eats his mom's food.
Because we're men, we are inclined to like what I like to call on my podcast man food movies.
Oh, okay.
Whatever the, you know, guns, explosions, breasts, fights, blood, action movies. That's man food criteria.
Right.
And Italian mob movies have always been man food. But listen, man, black people, we really have an affinity for the mob shit because Italians and niggas, we cut from the same cloth. You know, Italians speak in Ebonics like black people. And I do this thing on stage where I go, here's an Italian Ebonics word you've all heard before. You ready? Both of yous.
Yeah.
And a lot of the crowd is like, I don't know. It's like when an Italian dad says to his kids when they're getting on his nerves, whoa, knock it the fuck off. You guys have been going at it all fucking day. I can't take no more. And I'm talking to the both of you. So, you know, we let that shit.
I like that. Boaties.
Boaties. Yeah.
Boaties. There was a movie, Christopher Walken made some speech about how Sicilians specifically are related to black people.
And they don't want to admit that.
Yeah.
Italians don't want to admit
that. No, they killed him for saying it. They blew his head off.
Well, yeah, it's funny. Like, again, we have this love for Italian culture and everything mafia. When I go, you know, I wish Italians felt the same way about us the way they do about we do about them. Because right. They call us all kind of moulions and niggas and shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, but y'all cut from the same cloth, man.
Yeah.
If you do the history, y'all are basically us just with, you know, a tanner skin.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but it's
that's
like, come
true.
On, man.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you, you know, Italian man, womanizers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a womanizer.
Well, men are womanizers, period. But black people, we do everything with a flair that takes it up a notch.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, I got this thing where it's like, one of the things I love about Italians too is like black people, they really don't bite their tongue. Uh-huh. And they're great for making quotes and sayings that either make no sense or are extremely racist. Like you could have two Italian dudes standing on a corner talking about their relationships, and one will say to the other, and you know, there's a saying associated with black women, particularly when a white man dates outside of his race.
Yeah.
Hey man, the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice.
Yeah.
But you let two Italian guys tell us, fucking Vito, heard you went down to Florida with your new guma. I understand she's a black chick. I didn't know you like fucking shines. Hey, Paulie, don't knock it till you try it. Like the saying goes, the darker the nigga, the sweeter the berry.
So they take the phrase and they run it through the racist generator.
And probably like really think that's how the saying goes.
Yeah, right, right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, the Italians are they are the most racist. I don't know what it is, whether it's Boston or the Bronx or Philly. Yeah.
Very colorful, man.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe it's that Italian immigrants ended up living near black neighborhoods. Like you look at like Howard's Beach in New York, where there was that incident.
With Yusef Hawkins? Was that Yusef Hawkins?
Yeah, I don't remember, but they chased that dude into traffic. I think
it was Yusef Hawkins, yeah.
But there's always been tension in those particular cities. I don't know where else. Italians seem to mostly be
East. That's why I said, you know, whenever I perform in the East, I feel at home, because growing up in New York, Italians are all over the Eastern Seaboard.
Right.
But once you get to West Coast, Midwest, South,
I know.
Nothing.
Yeah, I know.
Which is why I can't even do some of the Italian jokes anywhere else, because people don't,
right.
The connection's not there.
Right, right.
You know, you're Irish, aren't you?
I'm Irish. I was born in the Bronx and then grew up mostly in Tarrytown, New York.
I don't know if you know this, but there's a great 9-part documentary series on HBO Max right now about the Celtics.
I saw the first episode.
I'm a binger, so I'm waiting until they all finish so I can just binge it. But, you know, you talk about Boston and Southie and the North End, you know, really rough in terms of racism.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably the Irish. I mean, look, the Irish have a bad history as well of in New York City when there was riots where there were black neighborhoods in New York that were like middle class, upper middle class, and the Irish were, you know, recent immigrants. They were fucking bred like rats. There was just hundreds of thousands of out of work Irish, and they burned down some of the black. Do you ever hear about this in New York?
No, I didn't hear about that, but that's reminiscent of the Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Exactly.
Massacre. Yeah.
No, it was a lot like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so the Irish have a bad history
damn,
with
niggas
that.
Can't have shit.
I know.
God not nice damn. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's checkered, but also Ireland as a country was never involved in any way with slavery.
Yeah.
Which is good. We have that going for us. We just kind of took a bad turn when we came over here.
I've always wondered, and you said you're Irish, but you were Brooklyn?
Bronx.
Bronx. That's born and raised?
I was there till I was 8, and then I moved to Tarrytown.
So never been to Boston, though?
I went to college in Boston.
I always wondered why.
And that's where I started doing stand-up.
Oh, okay. I always wondered why black dudes don't have that accent that are from there.
I know. It's almost like Patrice O'Neal almost sounded like a guy from Brooklyn or something.
Yeah. Man, he was from Roxbury.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Dwayne Perkins has kind of a little bit of a Boston accent.
Never heard it in him.
No?
Never.
Tiny bit. But not like white guys, that's for sure.
No, no, no. As a matter of fact, his sound is very highly educated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Highly educated. Why is that a slam? Why did that come out like a slam?
Because he's not gonna be confused for a good times nigga. He's gonna be a Huxtable.
Yeah.
He's a Huxtable.
That's hilarious. Yeah, it's no, the Irish have a bad history, but also, you know, I think we fought with the Italians just as much. And then, you know, and then it's funny, the Irish, once we got any money at all, now they've all become Republicans. You know, we were the original Democrats, the Kennedys, you know, fighting for civil rights and, you know, all that stuff in the 60s. And then in the 80s, they all got sort of, well, part of it was that they're all Catholic. Right. And the Republican Party sort of co-opted that with abortion laws and gay laws, and that's where the Catholics gravitated right. to. But yeah, so like, what part of New York are you from?
I grew up West Side, 34th Street, 9th and 10th Avenue.
Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Really? That's mm-hmm. an Irish neighborhood.
Yeah, I you know, latchkey kid, you know.
Yeah.
Playing around in deserted parking lots.
Right, right.
In the area. But I love it, man. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Cause
where'd you go to high school?
I actually moved to Jersey by the time it was time for me to go to high school. Uh-huh. So I went to elementary and out there at PS 33. Uh-huh. And then by the time I hit junior high, I was in Jersey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What part of Jersey?
North Brunswick.
Oh, yeah. Down by the old laugh, the stress factor.
Yeah. Exit 9.
Exit 9.
Yeah,
know baby. It well.
Yeah.
That's a weird area. It's nice.
It ain't what it used to be.
No, it's kind of seedy now, right?
No, it was seedy when I was coming up.
I haven't been there in a while.
Oh,
it was seedy when I was there.
Oh, no. Really? No. Well, you know, it's funny. Back then, that used to be really a all-black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Since then, it's now Mexican.
Yeah.
But it's not what it used to be. It just isn't.
I remember last time I was at the Stress Factory, I would go out to staying at the hotel. I'd go out for food, and it was literally 9 Mexican restaurants. The Church Street, is that mm-hmm, the one
yep.
it's on? All Mexican restaurants.
Right.
And the club, if people don't know the Stress, go to the Stress Factory.
It's one of the greatest clubs
it
in the city, in the country.
It's just so much fun.
Yeah, it is.
Jersey people are, especially the women, are loud, but yeah. fun loud. You know, yeah. they're not heckling you, but they want to be involved in the show. And then Vinny Brand, who owns the place, he starts the show out. He's a comedian.
Allegedly.
And then he starts the show with, I don't like the videos of like guys stepping on a rake, then Jim Carrey jumping up and down with a mask on. Like they do like 10 minutes of the best moments of comedy.
Right.
Like I don't need to follow that shit.
Right.
And then he's got this camera that goes around the crowd and it'll zoom in on a girl and then it'll just write like whore. And then it'll go to a guy and be like faggot.
Right.
And the crowd's laughing and they're cheering. And then Vinny goes on stage and there's this payphone on stage.
Yeah.
And he does this thing where he gets people to give their friends, like mothers, phone numbers. And then he'll call them on stage and be like, yeah, Barry's here. Can you come pick him up? We just caught him sucking somebody's dick in the men's room. And then the whole crowd goes, ah. And they go, and now Greg Fitzsimmons. You're like, what? I can't.
But you know what? Here's what I love about it. It's old school.
It's old school.
It's intimate. You're in the basement, kind of, when you got to step down.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brick wall. It's just very intimate. And a lot of clubs just aren't like that anymore.
I know.
It's the reason why I love Helium in Philly.
Yeah.
You know, it's the reason why I love improv in D.C.
Yeah.
You know.
I like the little clubs where the staff doesn't change. Those are the clubs you want to be at because it's like a home. It's like a family. They party together after the show.
Yeah. I recently did a Ontario Improv, which is also in my top 5. But then, you know, places that used to be but not anymore, like Irvine, Brea, since they remodeled.
Yeah.
And they've become, you know, like flashier, cleaner, nicer,
feels
bigger.
Feels like a theater, yeah.
It feels like a renovated strip club. Give me the dirty strip club.
Yeah, right.
Where, like, you know, pregnancy tests are still in the trash. You know what I mean? Fucking, the bitches got bullet wounds, stab wounds.
Right.
You know, I like that. A comedy club should feel like a dirty strip club.
Yeah, I want to see blood on the brick wall behind me.
Yeah, I don't want the fucking stage to look like flash dance.
No.
You know what I mean? I want old pussy juice on the pole.
Old pussy juice.
You got to Windex it down.
You got to Windex it down. Otherwise, the next girl's not going to be able to slide.
Yeah,
she's gonna get
man.
Stuck.
Come on, man.
Yeah. Keep that pole clean.
Exactly.
Yeah, I like Punchline in San Francisco's like
I've
that.
Never performed there.
Oh, yeah.
I've been through there, but I've never performed there. I always do Cobb's, and that's a weird joint.
Well, it's a rock club, more than a comedy club.
Yeah,
it's got that balcony.
Yeah.
I don't like a balcony in a club. If possible, no balcony.
Yeah.
Because then the ceiling's too high, and the laughter kind of dissipates into the
ether.
Well,
you know, the only reason why I like a balcony is because if anything that I could create a joke from.
Yeah.
Like I'll do the improv in Virginia Beach and they have the balcony and some girl might yell out, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm like, bitch, I can't hear you. Jump. Come closer, jump.
Yeah, there's always the Abe Lincoln section you're in up there, sir.
Right. You know. Right.
And then the other clubs that I really like are the ones where they're just independently owned and operated, where the guy, it's like in the old days, he'd pick you up at the airport, take you to your hotel, take you to radio in the morning.
Well, yeah, no, I'm good with all the everything but the picking me up shit.
No, like, you don't want that anymore.
Let me tell you something. When I first got on the road, I didn't know anything about writers and shit like that. So I was just, you know, I was green. So it was like, you know, however you pick me up, you pick me up.
Yeah.
And here's the day I went, all right, that's enough of this shit. I did some club in South Carolina, and the host was a clown by day, comic by night. This motherfucker picked me up in the clown car.
Ah, and there was 11 other guys in it?
No, but it was a big boot that was a clown boot with a big nose on the hood. And I'm just sitting next to this motherfucker in the clown car, you know, parked at a light, and I'm looking at all the pussies dry up that roll next to me. And I just went, nah, man, I need a rider, dude. I need a town car to pick me up. Fuck
he hits
this.
The horn. It's like,
get the fuck out of here. No, sir.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was always like a guy who chain smoked, and it was a Ford. What were those shitty Fords? Ford Focus or something?
Pinto or?
No, not the Pinto. Taurus. Mm. Remember, everyone had every road comic had a Taurus in the 90s. But, you know, I respect the hustle of the guys that, you know, have a small club. Like you just talked about doing a one-nighter. Yeah. You know, I went to Alaska and I did a couple nights in the fall. And these guys, they picked me up in a pickup truck at the airport, put me in this nice hotel. And then, you know, and then they're the local radio guys. I don't want that all the time, but once in a while it's charming.
Yeah, I'm done with charming, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and
where do you get picked up in, like a SUV?
No, well, sometimes, but either SUV or a town car, just by a town car service.
Right.
You know, because the other thing was like, you know, when before that it was like, you know, well, the one of the wait staff will pick you up and take you to the airport.
Yeah.
Problem with that is sometimes the motherfuckers don't get up on time.
Right.
So if I got a 6 a.m. flight, and because they went out drinking with the rest of the staff the night before, I'm sitting outside the hotel like, yo, I'm going to miss my flight. Where the fuck are you? Oh, I overslept.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right, man. Right. No.
No, I remember there was a comedian. I won't say his name, but Dane Cook flew in to do a college, and the college person picked him up at the airport, and they went to his hotel and had sex before the show. That's not a bad pickup right there.
Whoa. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I don't know the guy's name that picked him up, but it was a college student.
Wait a minute. Oh, shit.
No, it was not a guy.
Okay. All right. I'm sorry. There was a delay on my part.
I believe he told that story on my podcast, so I'm not. What else is in your rider?
I'm very simple, man. I don't really have anything else other than some shit I just added, which is, you know, because I'm trying to get healthier and do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, I asked for a bottle of extra virgin olive oil and some apple cider vinegar.
What are you douching yourself before the show?
a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil is very good for you.
So just drink it straight.
Just straight. And then I mix some water with some apple cider vinegar. And down that.
Really?
Yeah.
Helps your voice, too, I bet.
A little bit. Yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, I usually ask for decaffeinated tea and honey just for my voice.
You know what's
especially
really great for that?
Especially if you're flying the same day as the show.
Really?
You get all dried out from the flight.
Throat coat.
Oh, throat coat's the best.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Throat coat with some honey, a little bit of lemon.
Yep.
I drink those before the show, and I'm good. What else have I? Who's the guy that asked for the sneakers on every show?
Eddie Griffin.
Oh, Eddie Griffin. Yeah. It gets the same, what is it, like Air Jordans
Air Force
or something?
Ones. A fresh pair of Air Force Ones.
Every single show.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's the weirdest rider thing I've ever heard. I like when they leak out somebody's rider, because, like, Madonna would have one that was like, I mean, that's literally where, like, the orange M&Ms thing came from.
I remember when we had Jay Moore on our pod, he was saying, socks, fresh clean socks, and a humidifier.
That was his thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
socks in case, what, in case he's like on a road too long?
No, he said he goes, there's nothing that feels better than a pair of fresh, clean socks.
Yeah.
You know, I never was weird like that. I don't know if I should even say it's weird, but I try to be as low maintenance as possible, man.
Yeah.
You know, whatever that star diva shit is.
Yeah.
I got to have this, and this has got to be, the room's got to be set to a certain time. I don't give a fuck about none of that.
Yeah.
Just pay me, man.
Right.
Just pay me, respect me.
That's what I want. I want the respect that they're going to police the room when I'm on stage. If there's people talking, I want them warned and then thrown out.
That's my number one thing. Which is great when it's done. But then there's places where there's been places where I will literally, and listen, I'm pretty good at shutting motherfuckers up and down. But when you know you're dealing with somebody who's like the Mujahideen, they so drunk that it's a suicide bomber. You can't beat them. So I'm just at one point, I just go, yo, what the fuck are y'all doing?
Are
all the fucking wardens and the guards at lunch?
And they're all getting paid. They're standing in the lobby shooting the shit or on their phones.
Or standing against the wall the club. Like, what the fuck are y'all doing, man?
And I don't mind if they're yelling at me. At least I got somebody I can engage. It's the table that's talking to each other.
Right.
Because not only are they throwing me off, they're fucking up everybody around them. They got to go. That's why I don't want any parties more than four people anywhere near the stage. They are in the back row where you can throw them right out.
Does it bother you when you're doing your show and they start dropping checks?
There's a way to do it. Stagger it. Don't drop every check at the... Sometimes they all come out and they blanket the whole credit. They've got six servers all dropping. It's like, no, hit this section, then this one. Give me a chance.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
See, it's amazing that people don't know. You have to be a comedian to know some of that inside shit. Because from the outside looking in, you'd go, well, what's the big deal? You just get up there, you tell your joke. But people don't understand, man, the level of concentration you have to have at times when you're going... I'm in the middle of a bit. I can't stop to address something because if I do that, you can't go back to the bit. It's dead.
Right.
But at the same time, you're also gauging, are they talking so much that I really need to address it?
Yeah.
Because if they're not that big of a nuisance, I can let this go.
Right, right.
But if they keep going, at some point you're going like double dutch. When do I fucking... Yeah. And then when the staff comes over, another thing that bothers me that I want to say is, kneel the fuck down.
Pretend it's a helicopter.
Because when you're standing in front of the stage straight up, it's like everybody's watching TV and you're in the way.
Yeah.
And it distracts from them paying attention to what I'm doing.
Yep.
So it's like, it might seem petty, but those little things, it matters.
No, when you're a comedian, you're making so many micro decisions in that course of that hour. You know, am I going too fast? Should I walk more? Should I put the mic in the stand?
Right.
You know, little nuances of how you're doing each joke. And when you have to then factor in something external like that, it fucks up all those other thoughts you're trying to make. It's like a quarterback who's being blitzed. You know, you just can't keep your plays straight. I like when somebody yells out. Like, that's why I like the stress factor. I like Jersey comedy. I like Long Island comedy. I like when people are having fun. I want it to feel like a party. Like, I don't need to be the only guy talking for an hour.
Well, I don't mind audience participation, but I have to be the one controlling it.
Yes.
You know, because once you let too many people think that that's what the show is about, it's like giving your drunk uncle the keys to the gun cabinet.
Yep.
You know, everybody's got keys, you know, and that's dangerous.
Right.
Mixed with liquor.
Right,
So I have to kind of be in control of the chaos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have to send a, it's like, it's almost like you walk in the prison yard, you punch the biggest guy in the face.
Right.
So when somebody heckles, you have to annihilate them.
To let everybody else know, no ass rape will be tolerated here.
Exactly. My ass is my ass.
Exactly. If I give you the booty, I give you the booty.
Right.
But you ain't taking it.
You're not taking it. I'm getting some fucking cigarettes out of
it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when you, then I give, so that's the stick, but then I'll also give the carrot. If somebody is near the stage and I engage them and they say something really funny, I don't try to top it. I give it to them. Mm. I go, I don't know what to say now. That was a crowd fucking loves when you give it up to the audience.
That's humility.
Yes.
They love that.
Yes.
You know?
Humility is everything. I was thinking that yesterday. I was thinking about how we can get so competitive. And, you know, some of these comedians that are doing, like, big theaters and arenas and stuff, I just think about, like, you know, and some of them, like, somebody like a Bert Kreischer who's playing arenas somehow still has humility. He's still the most humble, giving, decent guy. And I don't know that I could be that guy if I was at that level. Like, I sort of feel like I'm at the level I'm at. I always say I crawl my way to the middle. I'm staying right here because I'm not, my head's not going to get blown out. I got my wife and kids. I pay attention to them. I'm a good friend.
Yeah.
But I have had brushes where I'm more famous, or I hosted a show on MTV or whatever. I had moments.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like I didn't like myself as much at those moments. I feel like I lost my humility, you know? Have you found that at certain times? Because obviously you're on Mad TV for what, like 7 years?
About 8 years.
8 years.
Yeah.
Did you find, and be honest with me, did you find there were times where you were like, I was kind of big-headed there or something?
You know what? I don't know if that's the right word, but to me, it's like, listen, I always say this. I'm grateful for Mad TV because it made me more famous than I had been up to that point. But if I'm being completely honest, I wanted SNL.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the difference between playing in the CBA versus the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I play. What was it before the league in basketball before it merged with
American
the NBA?
American Basketball League?
Where Dr. J played.
Yeah, yeah.
Before
I
it merged into the NBA. So I kind of felt like I was in that league. And as grateful as I am for what it did for me, what it gave me, deep down, it's just that thing where you just go, I just feel like if I had been on SNL with what I was able to do on Mad TV, my career would have been in a different place.
Yeah.
Did
you audition for SNL?
No, I got on Mad TV first, and Lorne Michaels had a strict thing where
it
was like,
I know
if
that.
You
can't do both.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, there's this thing in me where it's like, I've always wanted Kevin Hart like fame.
Really?
The ability to do an arena and be that famous. But the older I get and the more I go through this business, I feel like I at least, I don't know if I'll ever get it, but I at least want to taste it.
Really?
I want to know if it's what I think it is. And I might not like it once I really get it. Be careful what you ask for. But because I haven't gotten it, I want it so bad. Just so I can go, oh my God, this is everything that I knew it was going to be.
Yeah.
Or I'll go, I don't like this shit.
What do you think it'll be, the good version of it?
I don't know.
What will it be that you don't already have?
Complete access, you know, without a fight, you know? It's like, I'm sure there's, with levels to everything, there's going to be some pushback. But I refuse to believe that when you get to Jim Carrey's level, you're fighting the same fight that I'm fighting.
Uh-huh.
Whatever fight he's fighting can't nearly be what this is.
Yeah.
And whatever that is, okay, bring it on. But I'm tired of this fight. Let me fight that fight.
Yeah, but
because I don't want anybody telling me what I can't do creatively.
Yeah, yeah.
When you're a major movie star and you're producing box office hits, it's like you get the keys to the city.
They
creatively
let you develop your own
leave
stuff.
Me to fuck alone.
Right.
And this is the one thing I hate about this business. It's like you got people in high powered positions with, you know, titles and wearing suits that are trying to tell you what funny is. It's like, just sign the fucking check, man.
That sounds anti-Semitic when you say that.
Well, you know, Jews run the business now. Dynamic.
But
let creative people create.
But can't you create? You've got a podcast. You get to go on stage every night and say whatever the fuck you want. I mean, isn't it relative? Like, because more money, more problems. What about all the assistants you're going to have?
I don't know that I believe that. I think that's an overrated quote. More money, more problems. Be broke, even more problems.
Yeah, but you're not broke.
I know, you have
a level of access.
I know,
that
but don't. But
most, look, if you were to put a percentile on where you are in this business, you're in the top 5%, if not 3%. And you gotta look down because the struggles and the lack of choices that people have below you. I'm not saying that. Like, I just think I look at you as a guy that is so in control of their career. I've always admired you because you're a guy that, you know, you put yourself out there, you continue year after year to play A rooms to big, you got a great reputation, you know, and it's just, It makes me sad that you want this arena thing because I
didn't get in this to go, I just want to be here.
Yeah.
My dreams weren't just to be here. My dream was to be there. So that's the dream.
Yeah.
Now, if I fall short of the dream, okay. But let me not be happy and complacent with here when where I want to be is there.
Yeah.
You know?
Unless it makes you unhappy that you want that.
Well,
so
let me
bad.
Find out. Let me find out if once I
no, no,
get
no.
it.
Unless it makes you unhappy that you covet it so much.
No, no. But my unhappiness is just, you know. Listen, you're right. When I put things in perspective, you look back and you go, hey, man, you better than. There's a lot of people want your spot.
Yeah.
And that's great.
Right.
But when I lay my head down at night, what I really want, I don't have yet.
Mm.
So I don't feel good with just being here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But what do you think you need to do to get there?
Let me blow off my tap shoes and get ready to get my Louis Armstrong on. Potato, you say tomato.
Oh, really?
It's a little bit of that.
Oh,
you know, okay. I you know, my mouthpiece, while it might be my greatest attribute, it's also my biggest detriment.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in a business where, you know, they like you to be quiet and not so vocal.
Right.
And let's be honest. When you're black and you're male in this business, whatever it is that you do is even bigger when I do it.
Uh-huh.
Because it's like, if we're being honest, nigga, stay in your place.
Mm-hmm.
That's the racism of this business.
Yeah.
Show business has always been that way to black people. So, you know, I got to learn to Fred Astaire a little bit better without selling out.
Yeah.
Maybe keep my mouth closed about at times.
Yeah.
Lose some weight, look better.
Why do you think you speak out like that?
Because it's who I am, man. I'm a New Yorker. I'm a male, alpha male, and I'm an Aries.
Mm-hmm.
I got all the ingredients for dynamite.
I'm an Aries, too. I speak out way too much.
Yeah.
I once said to Jimmy Kimmel, he was on the podcast, and I go, what is it about a guy like you that makes it to the certain place and a guy like me doesn't? And he goes, because a guy like you hosts the Porn Awards.
Which I did twice.
I did twice, too. And that's the kind of shit that... It seems fun at the time.
But here's the
hypocrisy. Doesn't help you.
But here's the hypocrisy. For whatever the shade is that is going to be thrown at you from this industry for doing that, what's my man? Weinstein just entered the chat.
Yeah.
There's people in this business, drugs, alcohol, sex.
Yeah.
Some may say pedophilia.
Yeah.
What are you doing that hasn't already been done by people more powerful than you?
Right.
So let's knock off the bullshit.
Although nowadays, if you do it right and you apologize,
you
or not
away
even
with it.
Apologize, that's your ticket to ride. Look at Tony Hinchcliffe. You know, that guy got in trouble for saying something and then...
But did he really?
His agent dropped him. He lost all of his stand-up gigs.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, he got shut. He got shut down fast.
That feels like all of that shit is temporary, though. You know what I
mean? Well, it is if you handle it right. I think he didn't apologize.
Right.
Which I think is maybe the right way to do it. He addressed it without apologizing, which as a stand-up comic, I think there's a way to make it work for you, especially now.
Listen, man, the money talks.
Yeah,
and the moment you start, I once had a manager used to be with Brillstein Entertainment, who I'm with now and have been since forever. But this particular manager at that time, Peter Safran, I don't know if you
sure, yeah,
yeah, and he's like a big movie producer now.
Uh-huh.
He's done a lot of stuff with James Gunn and Guardians of the Galaxy, Suicide Squad. He once told me, we had lunch. He was like, "Listen, man, if you can open a weekend, you could damn near be Hitler."
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
But if you can open a weekend at the box office, all is forgivable.
Mel Gibson's back on top.
Hey, come on now.
You know?
So, you know, that's the thing about this business, the insanity of it.
Yeah.
You're always one something away
from
turning everything around.
Right, right. It's funny, I'm reading, there's a great new biography of Muhammad Ali that's out. And I mean,
talk
about breaking the rules. Like when he was coming up, I think it's a lot about what you were talking about. It was 1960,
yeah.
And you know the Joe Louis and the guys that had come before him, they were the version of a black guy that white America wanted. You know, they were humble and they worked hard, and then he came along And he started saying, I'm the greatest. He started denigrating his opponents. And he got all the sports writers talk bad shit about him.
Well, let me go back a little bit before that, though. Joe Louis was. But even Ali said in an interview, man, they think I'm crazy. Jack Johnson was crazy.
Yeah.
This right. motherfucker was brutally crazy. Knocking out white men and then sleeping with white women.
Yeah, and that was in the openly, 20s, right?
When they was hanging niggas.
Yeah, right.
He goes, so people think I'm crazy. Jack Johnson was a motherfucker.
Yeah.
I'm still the greatest fighter of all the great fighters. Seven survivors, Cuba. I've been knocked out, never been knocked out, never had a mark on my face. I fought Joe Frazier. I felt quite known. I'm still the greatest. I'm still pretty.
Do Ali walking into a fraternity party.
Oh, look at all these women. I do old Ali, you know?
Yeah.
I can't believe all these women dressed like this, showing all the body parts, the breasts, the ass. It's not good. It's just not good at all. Cover up. Be a Muslim. Do the right thing. Eat. Don't drink. Don't do alcohol. Damon Wayans had one of the funniest jokes. He said when they did the Ali movie.
Yeah.
With Will Smith and Ali went to the premiere. The movie was so long that at one point even Ali was like.
All right, it's time for Fastballs with Fitz.
Uh-oh.
What's your best male friendship?
Oh, the one that I've had with my boy, who I call my brother Ishmael, since fourth grade. We've been thick as thieves since the fourth grade. He lives out here.
Yeah.
We watched each other get fat, have families. He's like, I'm his Doc Holliday to his Wyatt Earp.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
What does he do for a living?
He has two jobs. Works one in a financial situation.
Yeah.
And then one where he works at FedEx.
No shit.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. That's my heart, man.
And you guys, you grew up in New Jersey together?
Yeah.
Did you ever roommates?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, he was at one point when he left Jersey, he was living in Florida, but he was struggling. So I just called him up and was like, hey, man, come live with me out here in Cali.
Yeah.
And that was back in 94.
Right.
He's been here since.
Do you ever have moments with him where you sort of clear the air, like where you say, like, there's something you're doing that is bothering me, or are we good?
No.
Isn't that funny with male friendships?
No. Come on, let me tell you something.
Females will bring that shit up every time they hang out.
If I was gay, he'd be the man I'd fuck.
Jesus Christ. Let's move on to the next question. It's fucking weird. I'm talking about friendship.
Because we're tightly bonded and we don't fight. And it's like,
yeah.
You know, no matter how close you are with your woman, she's still a woman.
This is not helping your career, man.
She gonna fuck with you about the two doors.
What's the closest you ever got to a fist fight on stage?
Oh, listen, I've never come to a point where I was gonna swing at somebody, but I've, and you know, of all the places you would think, the ghettos of Detroit, Chicago, the roughest parts of New York, the most gangster shit places I've been to has been Canada.
Get out of here.
Edmonton.
Really? Oh, Calgary. Yeah, Edmonton is tough.
Girl,
I see oil field guys.
Women. One girl got mad and threw a pitcher of beer at me. Another girl tried to come on stage and her boyfriend stopped her.
Really?
So, yeah, man.
Damn.
You ain't doing comedy right unless somebody want to put hands on you.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, it's a good feeling.
Yeah.
When they're dragging that person, when the bouncers are dragging that person out.
Yeah.
You just You go, nah, nah, nah.
Oh, yeah.
It's the bad. The whole crowd's behind you.
I had a girl. You know, it's one of the most gangster clubs in the country. The Funny Bone in Connecticut.
Oh, sure.
I had a girl throw a Heinz ketchup bottle, hit me in the face.
Did you keep going?
Oh, you talk about concentration.
Yeah.
I know it was cheesy, but I'm looking to my right because, oh, shit, my bad. I'm looking to my
right.
You
got to take it. If your phone rings on this show,
it might be some pussy. This one girl was mean mugging the shit out of me. Her boyfriend was laughing, but she wasn't laughing, and I hate that.
Yeah.
So I called her out, and I was like, bitch, why you, bitch, why you? Called a couple bitches. So I turned my head, and next thing I know, bow. She said, I got you, bitch, nigga.
Wow.
And then they took her out, and I could feel my face swelling up.
Yeah.
So at one point, I was like, said to the crowd, I was like, is my face swelling up? They were like, yeah. I was like, I know that was a fucked up incident, but I'm going to keep going. Try and catch up.
Yeah, there it is, everybody.
But you know, you have to, you know what I mean?
Yep,
make the most
good.
Of it.
That's good. Have you ever not finished a set?
No, but I've thought about it.
Yeah.
I tell you where I've thought about it. Colleges, which is why I don't do them no more.
Yeah.
I hate kids, man.
Yeah.
I hate them motherfuckers. Yep. Man. They no experience. There's nothing worse than being a seasoned vet and you're looking in the face of someone who's looking at you, making you second guess your career choice.
Yep.
And I just go, I know I'm funny. Mm-hmm. I know this shit is smart.
Yeah.
You motherfuckers just ain't live no life.
Right.
That's why I'm like, give me clubs. I wish we could go back to when you could smoke in clubs.
Mm-hmm. You can. You mean the audience.
The audience.
Yeah.
Be on stage and the light right, illuminates right. by the cigarette yep, smoke yep. and, oh, man.
Yeah, you want dirty people in the
yeah,
crowd.
Yeah, give me Times Square back
prison.
In the 80s.
You ever see Jeff Ross did that show in a prison?
I would never do that.
Dude, that'd be fun as shit.
Not for me. No, the idea of being a mistake happening?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's true. Be a good story.
Then shit.
Be a good podcast story.
Mm.
When's the last time you apologized to somebody?
I can't remember, but I'm sure it's recent. I'm sure it's recent. Yeah. Sometimes I just say I'm sorry just because.
Do you want to apologize to Vinny Brand for saying that he's...
Fuck no. Vinny knows it with his deaf ass.
All right, final question, and then we'll get to your tour dates, which you have a bunch of coming up. What's the hackiest bit you've ever done on stage?
The hackiest bit. I don't know that I've ever done one.
Oh, shut the fuck up.
I don't know that I've ever done one.
Stop. Nobody's ever answered that.
You
on
know what?
This
show. Here's why I say that. Because who is anybody to say what's hack? If the objective is to go up there and make an audience laugh, yeah. Like I've heard people go, man, Carrot Top, and they give him shit.
I agree with you.
The objective is to make the audience laugh. And if right. you accomplish that mission, you've done your job.
Yes.
Who the fuck are you to say what's hack? Well, I hear a lot of white comics go, you know, black comics always love to go black people, white people.
Uh-huh.
You know, white people do this, but black people do that.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, stereotypes are based in truth.
Yeah.
White people, y'all do a lot of the shit that we say. Uh-huh. And black people, we do some of the shit that y'all say.
Yeah.
So if no matter what it is, if we get the laugh, what do you, mission accomplished.
All right. I hear that. I just meant more like, I think we all have a standard for ourselves and mm-hmm. our material. And sometimes I'll look back at a bit and I'll go like, all right, I was taking the easy way out on that one.
I saw Barry Katz on his podcast. He was talking to somebody. And he was essentially saying that he thought crowd work was hacky, which bothered
Barry
me.
Barry said that?
Yes. And I just went, it's one of the hardest art forms within the art form.
Yeah.
It's like playing basketball. Not everybody has a full skill set.
Right.
Some guys are great dunkers, but maybe not the greatest shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Some guys are great offensively, but not great defensively.
Yeah.
Michael Jordan was the greatest because he did it all.
He did it all.
There were no weaknesses. So a lot of guys on stage, they, you know, their jokes are their playbook. And anything that happens outside of the playbook, they turn into a deer in headlights. Uh-oh, some motherfucker in the third row said, mm-hmm. What am I gonna do?
Yeah.
To be able to leave your playbook, and I put it in football terms, you could still be an award-winning Hall of Fame championship quarterback in the pocket, mm-hmm. a la Brett Favre.
Right.
But if you can Michael Vick it mm-hmm. and leave the pocket and scramble,
right.
you're twice as deadly.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And if you can't do that, that don't make you any less of a comic, but if you can do both.
Yeah.
You're very dangerous, and not every guy can do that.
Well,
so, but when Barry goes, you know, when the I don't do a great Barry, but Jay Moore, oh my God! But you know, when you say to somebody in the crowd, "What do you do for a living?" It's hacky, because it's like, no, it's the introduction to how you open the door.
How do you talk to somebody at a party? What do you do?
You got to ask a question,
right?
So, right.
How'd you and guys
that's
meet?
That's the gateway. To wherever you end up.
Yeah.
So to say that's hacky.
I think to say anything, I mean, there's guitar, people go, oh, guitar acts. You know, even fucking ventriloquists. You know,
right.
Otto and George were fucking brilliant. He was brilliant.
Until I saw the documentary on Jeff Dunham, I was like, this guy.
Yeah.
But then I saw the doc and I went, hats off, man.
Right.
Whole new respect.
Yeah, you're getting a crowd. You're making people laugh. You're making a living. People are making a living off of you. You're generating right. something, you know.
Right.
Yeah, hats off. All right, some tour dates coming up. I mean,
yeah.
I can't Can't say enough about you live. I mean, you're like a guy who's been honing it for 30 years. You fucking kill every time. Standing ovation. Not a lot of guys get standing ovations. You're like a standing O guy.
Thank you, sir.
I mean, I get people standing up, but they're leaving. The Improv in Ontario, March 13th through 6th. Now, that already
those
went
are
by.
Old, yeah.
All right, let's start with...
Anything after Waterford, like, for instance, coming up this week is Cincinnati.
All right, Cincinnati Funny Bone, March 28th and 29th. April 4th through 6th, the Improv in San Jose. May 31st, the Wilbur Theater in Boston. You can see all those racist Irish
guys. Yeah, look at a fucking niggas kid. I drove all the way in my catfish.
June 6th through 8th, Louisville. June 12th, Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. June 17th through 20th, Helium in Portland. You also got dates coming up in San Diego, Albuquerque, Appleton. Go to, is it just
AerieSpears.com
and get some tickets. Can't thank you enough
and
for
also,
coming back.
And also, please check out the podcast, Spears and Steinberg, available on all streaming platforms, YouTube channel, Spearsberg Pod. Hit like and subscribe. And I always tell people, I can't tell you how to listen, but I prefer you listen rather than do YouTube, because we didn't get on YouTube until 3 years in.
Yeah.
So all the episodes aren't available. And plus, if start from the beginning.
Start from the beginning.
I know it's a lot.
Binge. Yes, it's a journey.
It's like masturbation and potato chips. Once you start, you won't stop. You can follow the evolution of the show, the characters, the callbacks, the jokes. Spears and Steinberg.
But you never started masturbating.
I stopped when I was 16.
Oh, there you go.
And hit me up on Instagram under Aerie Spears. Slide in my DMs. I'll send you the links.
All right. Thank you again, man.
Thank you, brother.
Great to see you.
Appreciate it, brother.
All right, I'm very excited to tell you about a new sponsor to the show that are, do you want to support American farms these days? How about Mood? Mood is, it's the only online cannabis company that I would endorse. They're revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges. Sleepless nights, you got some stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. They deliver them right to your door, unmarked bag right away. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with promo code FITZ, F-I-T-Z. Do it. It's a new sponsor. I'm very excited about them. I've tried the gummies. I'm here to tell you, there are different strains that do different things. The sleepy time gummy, I'm telling you, 15 minutes, I was done. I was out. Woke up in the morning, no hangover, didn't feel groggy, had energy. They've got the Epic Euphoria gummies that are perfect for when you want to go and have a little fun. When maybe you need to hit the reset button on life a little bit. You want to turn it around. What makes these gummies different is they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary anywhere like these. They have gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity. How about some sexual arousal? Hey now. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS, and they can ship to most states in the U.S. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with code FITZ. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember, use promo code FITZ so we get the count at the checkout. Save 20% off your first order.